Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross. Good morning. I'm Colleen O'Brien as Dave enjoys a few more days off. We're going to have our weekly chat with Jill Schlesinger, our business analyst from CBS News. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning and happy almost New Year.
It is, isn't it? That's tomorrow. And I'm feeling good about 2019. I'm an eternal optimist, though. And I'm curious how you're feeling considering what the market was doing over the holidays.
Yeah, it was a pretty rough week looking back on the week that was. And I get that a lot of people are feeling anxious about what has just happened, which is essentially stock prices peaked late August, September. And since then, it's been quite a roller coaster, October, November, and December, really a quite crazy month. It looks like we are finishing the year with losses in the stock market for all major indexes. And that might be surprising to especially the newer investors who may not have been investing 10 years ago when we had the worst year in 2008. It was just awful. But it does look like we'll be on track to finish the year with single-digit losses for every index. And this despite 2018 probably being a very strong year for economic growth, the strongest probably since 2005. I think that kind of makes investors feel queasy about 2019. I, for one, though, I'm looking forward to potentially turning the page over and maybe getting rid of that sugar high of the tax cuts and seeing what's really going on in the economy. It does look like job creation remains very good. Wage growth is accelerating. So I'm hopeful that even if the economy were to slow down a little bit, it's not going to be devastating.
And I think what was comforting to me to read on JillOnMoney.com when you're talking about these holiday records and lessons is the market is not the economy. The economy is not the market. Can you go into that a little bit deeper?
Absolutely. I mean, when you buy a stock market index or a stock, an individual stock, what you are doing is you are placing a bet on the future ability of that company or group of companies to earn money in the future. And the more you think that company can earn, the more its prospects are really bright, the more you're willing to pay for that company, for a piece of that company. Now, the company will likely do better if the economy is strong. But that said, if people believe that economic strength will continue sort of unabated in the future, that's one thing, and they're willing to pay up for stock prices. But if they think the economy is going to slow down some, maybe not go into a recession, but just move from, say, 3% growth to 2.5% growth, they might say to themselves, well, maybe my company won't make as much money, in which case it's not worth as much as I thought it was worth. That's essentially, that repricing is what has happened at the end of the year in 2018. And it, again, just because the stock market sells off does not mean that the economy's headed into the tank. It could simply mean that investors got ahead of themselves and were projecting that growth would be much stronger in the future than it actually will be. So we could have a moderation of growth and still have companies make money. It's just that those companies may not be worth as much or make as much money, in which case their stock prices should come down a touch. And that's what has happened at the end of 2018.
Now, you said the word, you said recession, and many, that's okay, mid 2018, we're saying, okay, 2019, maybe early 2020 is the time where we're due for a recession. Are you still on that boat?
I am. I don't really think that we'll necessarily see a recession in 2019 for the whole year. I mean, right now we're looking at economic growth in the fourth quarter of the year to come in at maybe 2.7, 2.8%. And maybe in 2019 we start moderating. Maybe it's 2.5, maybe it's 2.7, maybe it starts slowing down towards the end of the year. But what is a recession? There are lots of factors that create a recession. A simple rule of thumb is it's two consecutive quarters of contraction or negative growth. And I'm not sure that's going to happen in 2019. I mean, bad stuff could cause that to happen, but it doesn't look like we're on a path for that to happen. And, you know, we might not have even if we were to have a recession, I should say, in 2019 and it starts officially at, you know, maybe the end of the year. It's not going to be a great recession where we have a complete financial meltdown. That's not what looks like is in the cards. So be careful about what we call recency bias. The thing that just happens in the near past, the near distance, tends to influence how you feel today. Just because we had a horrible recession in 2008 and 2009 doesn't mean that's going to be repeated in the next recession. We could have a run-of-the-mill recession where we dip for a couple quarters, two, three quarters, and then things resume. We just have to wait and see. And you, as an investor, you don't have to worry about it. Just know it's coming, and you don't have to get in or out 100% either way. You've got to stick to a portfolio that will see you through all different kinds of markets and economies.
It's always good. It's good throughout the year to do housekeeping on your finances, but I think end of the year is when people are doing resolutions. They're taking stock of their life at 2018. So what are some good financial checklists before we head into 2019 from you?
I like to call I have like sort of a generalized big three that I like to talk about. And the big three essentially means that you have zero consumer debt. So no credit card debt or no auto loans, even if they're cheap auto loans, just not having loans and really being on top of your student loan payments to eradicate that debt that can be really detrimental to your financial health. That should be a big goal. Your second goal should be to have 6 to 12 months of your living expenses socked away in a safe place, a savings, checking, money market account. And then your third goal is to maximize your retirement plan contribution to the extent that it makes sense for you. So, yeah, in 2019, you could put $19,000 into a 401k. That's the limit. And an extra $6,000 if you're over the age of 50. But if the best you can do is manage your debt and start paying into that emergency reserve fund, the best you can do is maybe put into your employer's match limit, maybe 6%, and that's a couple thousand dollars, do that. Those three things are probably the most important things for every American to be focused on. And you know what the problem is? When I tell you to do that, it all goes back to one very important concept, which is you've got to know where your money is going. And I don't mean you need to create a budget. I promise you, I hate budgets myself, but you've got to track your money. And there are tons of free apps. There are some paid apps that really can help you with this process. It used to be a lot harder to do. So, you know, if you like collecting a shoebox full of receipts and writing things down on a legal pad, go ahead and do that. But I have a number of different ideas in terms of apps that are really usable and easy that can help you with this process. Whether you make, you know, $10,000 or $10 million, the key to controlling your financial destiny is understanding what comes in and what goes out.
It's to be honest with yourself. We have an app that it's desktop, but it transfers to our phones as well, and it links with our bank account. It is really telling, and it shows you where you can trim, too, going, oh, I had no idea I was spending that much money on whatever.
Right.
And then you can trim. So absolutely smart. That's great, Jill. Great
All
advice.
Right.
Thank you, Jill. It was so nice speaking with you this morning.
Great to speak with you, and Happy New Year.
Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. What happens when you're counting sheep and counting antelope, and it just doesn't work? Could it be screen time? Could it be something else? Let's talk insomnia with the doctor.
Dr.
Gordon Cohen, MD, is it true that insomnia seems to be spreading?
Yeah, Dave, it is spreading, and it's a great question. Actually, you touched on it in your introduction there, and a lot of it has to do with screen time. We're actually starting to understand that exposure to light that's coming off of our screens, whether it's our phones, whether it's our laptops or computers, or whether it's off the television, is actually emitting light in certain wavelengths that when it hits our retina is interfering with our body's ability to produce melatonin in the proper levels, and it actually delays our sleep time. Our body is being tricked into thinking that we're still in daytime mm-hmm. because this light is coming off and hitting our retina and producing... Mm-hmm.
So if you are suffering from insomnia, how do you know whether it's due to the screen time or due to something else?
Well, look, I mean, insomnia can have many different causes, and it's a sleep disorder that regularly affects actually millions of people worldwide. And individuals who have insomnia, actually, their biggest problem is they find it difficult to fall asleep, or in some cases, they actually find it difficult to stay asleep. But those can be other problems as well. The side effects of insomnia are problematic because people often have daytime sleepiness, or they feel tired the next day, or they actually just don't feel well mentally, physically, or whatever. And oftentimes they have mood swings or irritability associated with it. We're now starting to understand that insomnia is associated with a higher risk of developing certain diseases. It's actually has other impacts on our health as well. So there's an organization called the National Sleep Foundation. They state that 30 to 40% of American adults report that they have had symptoms of insomnia within the last 12 months, and 10 to 15% of adults claim to have chronic insomnia. So it's actually not an insignificant problem.
So what do you do to treat it without, you know, short of going to the doctor? One thing I found works for me is if you do a lot of yard work during the day, or just, you know, a hike or a physical workout, I got no problem falling asleep.
Well, I think if you have insomnia, you have to understand the cause of it. It's like anything else in medicine, is you can have the symptom. The symptom is insomnia, but what's the actual cause? That's the diagnosis that we treat. And the thing is, there's many possible causes of insomnia. So sometimes, like insomnia, can be due to a secondary cause. It can be such as a problem with an illness or lifestyle. Other causes of insomnia can include psychological factors or medications, or actually if your hormone levels aren't right. You have to kind of break it down and see what the possible causes are. Things like jet lag, we all know, we experience that when we travel, or if we work a night shift or an evening shift or whatever, things that actually interfere with our ability to sleep on a regular schedule. Actually, changes in altitude. If you go to high altitude, you may not sleep as well until you acclimate to it. Our environment, whether it's, you know, warm out, noisy out, or whatever. So there can be things that disrupt our circadian rhythm. But then you can also have psychological issues. If you have depression, or some people have bipolar disease, or if you have anxiety, those things will obviously interfere with your sleep. And then there's the medical condition. So if you have chronic pain, obviously if you're having pain, it's difficult to fall asleep, or chronic fatigue syndrome. If you have heart conditions, heart failure or angina, some people have acid reflux, and that can interfere with your sleep. And there's a whole host of other things. In women, problems with their hormones fluctuation, so specifically estrogen and progesterone, and hormone shifts associated with aging or the menstrual cycle, those can interfere with a woman's ability to sleep. And then there's other things, you know, that we're all aware of, like the noisy partner who snores.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Or the restless sleeping partner or whatever. So, you know, there's all these kind of things. And I think that when somebody has insomnia, they have to, like, really go through what it is in their life and see what it is that's causing it.
So at what point do you decide, I got to go to a doctor for this?
Well, if you're experiencing symptoms and you cannot pinpoint it yourself, and it is not something that you can fix on your own, then I think that it's time to see a doctor and talk to your doctor about it and potentially get referred. And there's a whole area of sleep medicine where there's, you know, people who are specifically trained to look at how you sleep, the quality of your sleep, and any associated sleep disorders. And there's a lot of potential treatments, some of which are medications, some of which are other types of sleep aids. For example, if you have sleep apnea, you may need to sleep with a machine that puts continuous positive pressure into your airway so that your airway doesn't collapse.
What do you think about those white noise machines? The ones that can play either sort of a pink noise, you know, hissing kind of noise, or raindrops or thunderstorms?
Yeah, those actually are very, very useful. Actually, I myself, I don't use an actual white noise machine, but I actually like white noise. And so I run a fan in the bedroom at night because I like the sound of the white noise, and I like the air movement in the room. And it doesn't matter whether it's warm or hot. It's just the noise and some air circulation. So yeah, things like that that can actually help you be more comfortable in your environment, highly recommended and easy to use. And they're already oftentimes present in your home. And in fact, there's apps that you can get for your phone that actually will produce white noise and help you sleep through the night. So those things actually work quite well.
Just keep the screen off.
Just keep the screen off.
Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. Dr. Cohen, thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
In just a couple of weeks, the new legislative session gets underway in Olympia with plenty of new faces and an even stronger majority for Democrats. Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott is here with the breakdown of what that session should bring.
So, Colleen, Democrats grew their majorities in Olympia significantly in this past election, flipping 3 seats in the Senate and 7 in the House. Now, that leaves Democrats with a 28-21 majority in the Senate and 57-41 lead in the House. And beyond the seats that were flipped, many others were elected to replace retiring members of their own party. So there's going to be dozens of new faces in the legislature this session. There are going to be a half dozen new senators, including 5 Democrats and 1 Republican. That Republican is Senator-elect Jeff Holy, who makes the move from the House to the Senate to replace outgoing Senator Michael Baumgartner. In the House, there's going to be nearly 24 new faces. 10 new Republicans were elected to the House, and an 11th is on the way on January 14th. That's when a replacement for the resigning Matt Manweller will be named. And there will be a dozen new Democrats in the House, including the youngest member of the state legislature, 27-year-old Jared Mead, who just flipped the seat in the 44th district with his win over Mark Harmsworth. Meade did better than expected in the primary, coming out 7 points ahead of Harmsworth in the Snohomish County swing district. But he still had tempered expectations heading into the general election. When he actually won?
You work your butt off for months straight and you don't really know. You know, it's not like you're doing polling every 2 months like they do, or 2 weeks like they do in a presidential. So you don't know where you're at. And then the hit pieces start flying and you put out mail and they put out mail and you don't know where you're at, even though you do well in the primary. And so there's nothing like seeing the results and knowing like it all paid off.
Now, his race did not get particularly ugly, but there were some hit pieces, including one he says made his mom cry. But Meade says he knew it was all part of the deal getting into politics. After the win, he took a week off with his wife, and then it was time to get to work.
We had 2 weeks of orientation in Olympia, new member stuff, bipartisan stuff with the new Republicans and new Democrats. And so it's been a fire hose of information, and some of it's, you know, secondary knowledge I've already known from being a legislative aide for the last couple of years and interning and being down there. But a lot of it is eye-opening.
He's also been focused on meeting with everyone from constituents to other lawmakers in his district, which includes Mill Creek, Lake Stevens, Snohomish, and parts of Marysville.
And just trying to figure out what our needs are and compiling priorities for this session. I want to go into the session and be effective. And you can't go into a session being effective if you don't kind of do the planning and the groundwork prior in December and November. And so that's what I'm trying to do.
Education, affordable housing, and transportation are the major issues for Meade's district. One of the main issues in his campaign, whether or not there will be tolling for the trestle. Meade's position on that remains the same as it was when I spoke to him shortly before the general election.
It's too early to say, oh, we're going to have to toll it in order to fix it. I want to hear the data. I want to talk through with the executive board and figure out what is needed before we figure out what we're going to do about addressing that need. And that's the stage we're in. So to get ahead of ourselves and to say, oh, that means tolling, whether that means tolling every lane or tolling a couple of new lanes or no tolls, it's too early to tell any of that.
That's a safe answer.
And it is, and it's, and it was one he gave me before, because I talked to him right before the general election.
Yeah.
But this is a conversation I had with him after the election. So, you know, he wants to learn, and I'll kind of get to that going on. His big thing is he wants to be part of the conversation. He wants to see what everyone else has to say. There's that big study. I don't know if you're aware that is where the tolling of the trestle came from. There's
the
a study
Highway on, 2 trestle, just for people not familiar
the Highway
with Snohomish
trestle,
County.
It needs some upgrades, right? It needs new lanes. It needs a lot of work. There are a variety of options that were laid out in a study that has ways to pay for that. One is tolling those lanes, tolling those existing not-so-great lanes, which is one thing he is adamant that he will not do. Mm-hmm. He will fight very strongly against that. But, yeah, his answer is a little bit safe. But, you know, he's going in.
Yes, I support tolls, said no politician ever.
Right. Meade is in a good position to fight for that and other transportation issues, by the way, because he's been assigned to the Transportation Committee. He's also a big supporter of some kind of property tax relief. And while he does like the idea of saving the orcas, other clean energy ideas, and keeping an open mind on things like a carbon tax and other controversial issues, his overall philosophy heading into the session is making sure he is part of the conversation and that he's getting all of the facts and learning exactly how it will impact the people of his district. And this is a novel idea. I like this one. He's not just jumping right in to co-sponsor any legislation just yet.
I'm not going to be signing on to things I don't read through and don't totally support. And so there hasn't been enough time, really, for me to grab all these pieces of legislation. That doesn't mean I haven't been asked by my colleagues to sign on to legislation. I've just said no a lot, just because you got to read through things in order to feel comfortable signing on to them, right?
And it doesn't always happen that way, so glad to hear that going in. I asked him if his colleagues have been getting much grief because of his age, again, 27 years old.
It doesn't feel like I'm the youngest. People are treating me like, yeah, I'm a freshman. You still get treated like a freshman, don't get me wrong. But I'm not treated like I'm the youngest freshman. I'm treated like I'm a freshman. And I appreciate that about how my colleagues have treated me so far. Again, session hasn't started. Once things start swirling around, we'll see. But I didn't go down there to kind of be this lame duck for 2 years and learn the process.
And he believes he can make a difference.
I do think I can make a difference. I'm young, the youngest. Energetic. I've got a little bit of experience to know how the process works so that I don't go in there doe-eyed and confused and trying to learn versus I can go in there and start talking about issues and saying, here's what I know. Here's my perspective. And I'm not nervous to say it. And I'm not nervous to confront people and talk about the issues.
he had a lot of support from Democrats, obviously, going into the election. He's from this very purple district, though, a big swing district, and that's his thing. He wants to, he says he's not going to lean one way or the other. He's got an open mind, and he'll legislate that way going in. So we'll see how it all comes out once the session starts.
And there's been a lot of tough sessions with special sessions. I think the last one had three special sessions, right? So with this new makeup, with a larger Democratic majority, does that mean we avoid those types of situations? Is there going to be more partisan agreement moving legislation through because of this?
I think that it'll definitely change the way we see things work. There, you know, we had minor, for the longest time, we had the Senate, the Republicans controlled the Senate, and that caused... and then you had Democrats controlling the House. So that caused things to kind of get slow. A lot of the reason for some of the more recent special sessions, though, had to do with the McCleary issues. So I think that we see things move a little easier through with the Democratic majorities that are so significant now going in. But also, I think there are some things that not every Democrat is going to support. So just because there's a big majority of Democrats going in doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to get an easy through on the capital gains tax, for instance, or some of the carbon tax proposal that has been up again. Not every Democrat supports that. So I don't think I don't see us in a special session, but you never know.
And it could be an unprecedented situation. So maybe there isn't an answer, but with the governor possibly focused on a 2020 presidential run, of course, speculation always swirling around Governor Jay Inslee. How does that create a tough situation for the legislature?
And I think the governor has already laid out his legislative priorities. He's put out what he wanted in his budget. Mm-hmm. Those are going to turn into bills, and those will be hashed out in the legislature. As far as he's concerned, what he really has to do going down the line is at the end of the session is sign whatever comes out at the end.
Because I don't know if we've ever had a governor in recent history running for president who's actively in office, right?
And not in my recollection. Yeah. No, I don't think so. And, you know, a lot of eyes will be on him. We'll see how that all plays out. But he needs to be here at home. You know, some of his big priorities are mental health, right? That's going to be the major, major focus in the legislative session.
Carbon tax.
And mental health has been described to me as the new McCleary, right? There's a massive, massive investment that needs to come. Everyone has their own ideas beyond what the governor has proposed. So that'll be a big deal. Carbon tax will be a big deal. And there's a lot of other things. So
it's going to be an interesting year.
It is going to be. Again, January 14th, session starts.
Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Let's get to your daily dose of kindness. A community banded around a Puyallup couple whose car caught fire at Good Samaritan Hospital 2 days after their daughter was born. And Cairo 7's Deborah Horn has the story.
She came into the world 3 weeks early, but Kennedy turned out to be her parents' ultimate Christmas gift.
Had to come early, but she came out fine and healthy.
But then their world turned upside down.
Next thing I know, I saw smoke coming out of the dashboard, so I dropped the glove box and seen the whole glove box was full of smoke.
In fact, his vehicle was on fire.
I was parked in the parking garage next to 20, 30 cars. And so I said, this ain't happening here, and pulled out.
He drove out of the garage. Good thing, because moments later, his vehicle was engulfed in flames.
Potential of damage to other cars in the parking garage could have been huge.
His plight captured the hearts of the Central Pierce firefighters who put out the fire.
I reached out on social media last night and this morning and tried to get a lot of people to donate some money for him. And
as it happens, Trent's brothers both work for Sunset Auto Sales here in Tacoma. When the owner found out, he decided to donate a vehicle to the new parents, and his brothers sprang the surprise.
Fire it up.
It left his girlfriend speechless.
It means a lot. Went through a lot last night, and it means a lot that people care.
That's a nice story. It's a nice local dose of kindness, too. If you have any kindness happening in your life or in your community, you can always reach out to me. I love sharing these local stories. You can text the show at 98973. That's the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. You can email me. You can find my email address at mynorthwest.com. I'm on Twitter, too, at Colleen Cairo FM. Really not hard to find online. So you can get me those kindness stories. I've enjoyed sharing these. I was just looking back. My very first dose of kindness was August of 2016. So it's been a while. It's something I love to do every day at 7:30 is just share about 60 seconds of something good happening in this world. time for our Sports Insider Now from 710 ESPN Seattle, brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. It's Danny O'Neill from Danny, Dave, and Moore. Good morning.
Good morning, Colleen. Happy almost New Year.
I know. I was going to say happy last day of the year.
That's exactly right.
Are you ready to kiss 2018 goodbye?
Yeah, because I'm ready for the Rose Bowl tomorrow. It's going
right.
to be awesome.
And you're going.
I am.
Oh, that's wonderful. You already said that we have more than enough reasons to beat Ohio State?
That's correct.
Whew, I got it right.
Yes. It's going to be very exciting. A one-loss Ohio State. The Huskies have got a lot on the line. And, well, the Seahawks did their part yesterday, although that was a pretty uninspiring game.
My first reaction was to, you know, lament and talk about the dominant years where the Legion of Boom was around and a Super Bowl bid was almost guaranteed. But then I paused and I thought, no, I liked yesterday. That was my favorite game of the year.
Oh, God.
The victory was sweeter.
Oh, no. No, it was hideous.
I loved it.
It was ugly.
I loved it because, I don't know, I guess the drama of it, I was into it. Instead of just sitting back, eating your nachos, ignoring the game because you know we're going to win, I had to get into it.
Yeah.
I was sad. I was exuberant. I don't know.
But that's interesting.
That's just
theater
me.
Of emotions that's there. Yet I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, that's the worst team in the league. And the Seahawks are going neck and neck with them.
Was it the worst team or the worst special teams?
Well, the Seahawks, their special teams was awful. And look, for all the different things, their offense played pretty poorly for a significant chunk of the game.
Yeah.
The defense was pretty good. And then their special teams was just abominable.
Well,
so maybe they got that out of their system.
How do you base the offense stinking? What do you
Five straight drives in which they didn't get a first down.
Okay. I was wondering if you were going to say sacks, because Russell was sacked six times. Are we over Russell getting sacked? I feel like it's just a given.
Yeah. Well, that shouldn't happen like that. Now, they had different people in different places on the offensive line. They had one injury replacement, Ethan Posick, and then they had a guy that switched positions in Jermaine Ifedi. So of the five guys on the offensive line, they had three people in new places yesterday. So the fact that they gave up six sacks, all of them on third down, is not that concerning to me. At the same time, I thought we were over him getting hit that often.
I feel like I'm over it.
Yeah.
I just expect it to happen now, and we win whether he gets sacked, and we lose whether he gets sacked.
And he is an indestructible cute little bugger.
Yeah,
he's
he can
unbelievable.
Really tuck and roll, can't
oh,
he
could take some punishment. I'll tell you what. They talk about boxers having a chin. Like, his is made of granite.
Absolutely.
Like, you cannot knock him out. And then Sebastian Janikowski, who I came up with. You remember the helmet car? They used to have a helmet car that would drive around.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about, though.
I tried to take it one time over in Renton, and I got in trouble for that because you're not supposed to drive the helmet car over to McDonald's. But I think we should get the helmet car for Sebastian Janikowski.
Yeah, why's that?
And just save him the wear and tear on his legs. We'll drive him out onto the field when he needs to kick.
Yeah.
We'll drive him back to the sidelines. He came up with two pretty big kicks late in that game.
So how did special teams stink but also win the game?
Yeah, well, because it was the punt team wasn't asked to do anything.
That's true.
The punt unit was awful. They had a punt deflected.
Yeah.
They had a punt outright blocked that resulted in a touchdown.
Yeah.
And they gave up a 45-yard return that set up the Cardinals scored 24 points. Yeah. You could look at it and say that 17 of those could be attributed fairly directly to the punt team. That's awful.
Yeah.
Absolutely hideous.
I'm still going over why I loved this game, though, all things considered, and how agonizing it was at times, and that the Cardinals was able to tie it up twice. And I don't know. I guess I just loved the drama of it, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact that our team had to scrap to win. I guess I didn't expect the Cardinals to be that good.
Yeah, they shouldn't have been. Yeah. But they did. And Seattle... Here's the best summary of the game that I saw was from Ross Reichendorfer, who is a follower of the radio shows, that he said last night. Last year they lost a meaningless game to Arizona at home. This year they won a meaningless Arizona game against Arizona at home, and they're going to the playoffs.
There you go.
This year, much better.
Absolutely,
much
better.
So
the Cardinals
better.
Done then?
Yes,
they're done, and we. Play the Cowboys.
At Dallas on Saturday night.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's exciting. You better be careful. One of your news reporters is all dudded up.
Oh, I'm not scared of Hannah.
Yeah. You ready to go? There's going to be a week full of trash talking. She's in full Dak Prescott regalia today.
It is unwavering, her faith in the Cowboys.
I'm excited to see what will happen. The Seahawks beat him earlier this season. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot has changed. I'm looking forward to seeing how Seattle plays this game.
That's it?
Yeah.
Setting up any expectations.
Yeah,
this
the
early?
Seahawks should win this game.
Okay.
They should win. They beat the Cowboys earlier this year. The Cowboys have won one playoff game under Jason Garrett. They are a perpetual mediocrity that won probably the worst division in the conference this year. Maybe not. Maybe that might be an overstatement. But I think the NFC East was pretty thoroughly awful. And they won that division. Seattle's going to go down there. You don't really have a home field advantage for Dallas down there. It's a big, massive stadium, yeah. But it's not loud.
Is Carroll going to make any adjustments to the team before this game?
We're going to see if J.R. Sweezy, one of their offensive linemen, get back.
Boy, where has he been?
Well, he hurt his ankle last week, and as Pete said, he's suffered something that usually takes 3 to 4 weeks to recover from. He's going to do it in two. He'll be ready to go next week.
Who's the team to beat?
The team to beat is the Saints. The Saints are at home.
Really? Through,
yes. The Saints. The Saints are the best team. The Rams are number two, but they tailed off the second half of the season. And then in the AFC, it's the Chiefs.
All right. Saturday against the Cowboys.
Prime time. 5:30. Let's go.
I know. Make it dramatic, boys.
Yeah, or just win. They don't need. They don't. Colleen.
Maybe
they don't
need
to make it.
In my life.
They don't need drama. Yeah. Everybody would be just fine with a nice 10-point victory in which it never gets close. Everybody would be absolutely okay with
that. One thing I know for sure, never throw the ball at the 1 yard line. I don't need that kind of drama. Thank you, Danny.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. 8:14 on Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross, who is off. I'm Colleen O'Brien, joined by Hannah Scott now. Gun regulations, the death penalty, wage theft, data breaches, all targets of legislative proposals from the state attorney general, Bob Ferguson, for the upcoming session. And wouldn't you know it, Hannah spoke with Bob Ferguson about those.
So some of these proposals we've seen from the AG before, others we're seeing for the first time. Among the new ones, a ban on 3D printed guns or ghost guns. Among other things, Ferguson says the law would include new requirements to stop companies or individuals from emailing blueprints for 3D printed guns to people in our state.
Part of our law would say, hey, before you do that, you have to make sure that the individual you are emailing that to, you essentially have to do a background check. Because if you want to buy a gun in Washington State, you have to do a background check as well. That's part of our requirement for these ghost guns. It also makes sure it's illegal to compile a ghost gun yourself from different parts. So there's different parts of these ghost guns that we think there are loopholes that need to be closed, and this bill would accomplish that.
On the more familiar side of things, the AG again proposing bans on so-called assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Ferguson thinks the fact that voters just approved sweeping new gun control measures in 1639 could give him an edge this time around.
I'm hopeful that that overwhelming support by the people will encourage legislators to take another look at what I think are common sense gun reforms like limiting magazines on weapons. Right now in Washington State, you can put as many bullets in your weapon as you can put on there. There's no limits for a high-capacity magazine. Other states have a limit, say 10 rounds on your weapon. That's common sense. We think it makes sense, and I'm proposing a high-capacity magazine limit of 10 rounds here in Washington State.
Now, you mentioned he's hopeful because of the gun control measures approved by voters in 1639, but isn't 1639 being challenged legally now?
It is, yeah. That's a pending federal case by the Second Amendment Foundation and the NRA. They had asked for an injunction before that law kicks in, and I'll have to check on this when everyone's back from vacation, but part of that law goes into effect the beginning of January. So if they haven't gotten an injunction yet, and I don't believe they have, to stop it from taking effect, I think it's just going to keep rolling forward.
Okay.
So he's also proposing the ban, bringing back the ban on assault weapons.
So take a weapon like the AR-15. Right now you can walk into Cabela's and buy an AR-15. I think, and I agree with other states, that have banned the sale of assault weapons. And from my standpoint, that's a common sense gun reform. Other states have done it. The courts have upheld those limits. I think Washington State should join those states as well. So we propose that bill as well to ban the sale of assault weapons.
So people with existing guns defined as assault weapons would be grandfathered in under his proposal. Now, again, he's proposed this several times in the past. As for the chances of getting this done this time around, here's what he thinks.
Sometimes legislators don't want to take action on common sense gun reform bills, even if they support them. Some view them as a third rail of politics, right? Touch it and bad things happen. But again, that's why I think the passage of Initiative 1639, again, that was a initiative that when proposed to lawmakers in the last 2 years, they did not vote on it. So it's my hope that the legislators will see the actions of the people. They'll realize the people are way ahead of them when it comes to common sense gun reform and will take these measures up.
So the AG is again proposing a bill to abolish the death penalty in our state. Now, this is despite a state Supreme Court ruling earlier this year that found that the death penalty is unconstitutional in Washington state as applied.
What that means is it's not unconstitutional, period. It's unconstitutional in its application in Washington state, how it's actually implemented. In the past, when courts have made those decisions, the legislature has, quote-unquote, fixed the death penalty, addressed the problems identified by the court. So the death penalty is not off the books, despite the Supreme Court's decision. In my view, it should be off. Last year when I proposed it, it passed the state Senate on a bipartisan vote. So we think the votes are there in the legislature. And with a longer session, we think we have a good chance.
So I haven't looked today. I have not yet seen any pre-filed bills that would go the other way and try to make a fix for the death penalty. I would not be surprised if we did see one, though, at some point in this session. He's also proposing a new one-year cooling-off period to keep certain state workers from becoming lobbyists, which we don't have.
If today was my last day as attorney general, I could turn around tomorrow and be a lobbyist for a corporation on bills down Olympia related to work I've done as attorney general. That makes no sense. Most states have some sort of what they call a cooling-off period before an elected official like me or my chief of staff, who has intimate knowledge of state government, as you might imagine, and all the players, can turn around and be a lobbyist on state issues. But literally in Washington state, there is no waiting period at all.
So his proposal would change that and make a one-year waiting period again. Also making the agenda new rules that would allow for penalties against employers who commit wage theft.
What happens is in Washington state, if you're an entity that's caught engaging in wage theft, if you simply pay back the individuals who you owe them their wages, there's nothing more the state can do in terms of penalties. Well, that makes no sense. That just encourages folks to roll the dice and say, I'm not going to pay these folks these wages. If they complain, if there's a process and it comes to my attention, well, then I'll pay them and I've frankly lost nothing. If you're someone who wants to operate that way, there's no disincentive for you to engage in wage theft. And we think that makes no sense.
So his bill would allow the state to levy penalties to deter wage theft. Also a bill that would allow everybody to, if you have like traffic fines in multiple jurisdictions, you could put them all together in one. So you could get one payment plan to pay off of that. It helps to keep people from getting their license suspended.
Yeah, bundle your penalties.
Bundle your traffic penalties. Oh, and data breaches, I want to get you really quick. There are some new rules for the data breaches on what people, consumers have to be notified for, which surprisingly, like if your tax ID number is taken and things like that, you don't have to be notified now in our state. So it would implement that and require that notification come within 30 days.
That's great. All right. The session gets underway January 14th.
Yep.
Thank you, Hannah.